It's time to talk about the outdoors in South Alabama. Hunting, fishing, and getting outside along the Great Gulf Coast. It's time to take it outside with FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. With reports, stories, how-to information, and Dr. Bill's Marine Forecast. Here's Sean Sullivan and Mike Ward.
Yeah, I wonder if when we hear the Marine Forecast this morning, if you'll be looking forward to next week and saying Gulf snow or something like that. Hey, welcome to FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. I'm Sean Sullivan, my buddy and co-host Mike Ward right here. And is Icemageddon coming?
It is. It looks like it is.
Yeah.
So Jason tells us it's coming.
Well, Dr. Bill, more importantly, told us it's going to happen.
Yeah. So,
and Dr. Bill does not have the pressure, because he doesn't listen to me. He doesn't have the pressure of big bosses trying to get him to hype things up.
Yep.
So when Doc says it, you know, it's an E.F. Hutton moment when he says something. So looks like that's coming. And on today's show, though, for that reason, we're going to talk some fishing.
Because I bet I know one person, only one person, that would be out in the middle of the ice storm and the snowstorm.
Well, he told me Thursday morning when we fished that that was a no-go. Captain Bobby Ambruscato, you said Tuesday's a no-go for you?
Well, I have an opening, Mike, if you want to go with me.
And that would definitely be a no.
Yeah, that's a definite. That's not a definite maybe. That's a definite.
No, it's
no.
A definite no. No doubt about it.
Yeah, but he's not scared of the cold, because I went with him Thursday morning, and on the boat ride, I think the wind chill probably was about -8. So, yeah.
You're not as tough as Bobby. You should know that.
I'm not. I had to have gloves on for an hour and a half on the fishing trip. So, out there, but it didn't keep us from going.
Did it keep you from catching, though?
Nope, it did not.
We did, yeah.
Yeah, but the thing is, okay, so I'm bring Bobby. You know, we talked to Bobby, and we'll probably do, we'll have to be doing our spring show soon, but we talked to him throughout the year for like 1 hour shows for summer fishing and spring fishing, fall fishing. And winter fishing, Bobby tells us to go to the deep spots in any body of water, dead end rivers. Yeah, that's where the fish hole up. And Bobby, that was true Thursday morning, but it was also a lie, a damn lie. We found them in 3.5 feet of water?
Well, that was the deepest part of the area that we were fishing, it happened to be.
Yeah, here I am looking around for we got to find some 14, 15 foot stuff, some bends. And Bobby, we pull down, the corks are going down. I look at the machine, it's 3.5 feet deep.
Yeah. How about that?
So he's been sandbagging us, Bobby. That's what you've been doing.
Yeah.
So don't do as I say, do as I do. That's what my dad used to say.
Well, it was, but we did. We caught them both in deep spots and in shallow spots. And yeah, I guess at a certain point, yeah, winter fishing, you're going to say, slower. And we definitely worked lures slower on Thursday morning, but still they were plenty willing to bite. And that water temperature, at that point even was in the 50s?
Had to have been in the 50s. I know it's this is the coldest time of the year, when it gets, where it's getting ready to get colder than this. But, it's on down there, and it's gonna stay this way for the next couple months. And what happens when – the reason you have to slow down is not only because the fish themselves are cold, but them being cold-blooded, their prey is slow. And so it's not going to look natural when you have a bait just blasting through the water, zipping through the water. Not that they're going to chase it anyway, just probably because physically they can. But the other thing is the bait is just not doing that. And so so that's the other reason that you have to slow down the bait. In our case, we're imitating small mullet, maybe even pogies. You have to slow down because they're not going to be moving like they do in the spring and the heat of the summer. Just they physically can't. Their whole bodies are the same temperature as almost the same temperature as their environment, which is the water around them.
Which is amazing too, that they can even open their mouth to bite. Because if you put your hands in real cold water for a while, and then you kind of lose the ability to grip and ungrip, and the fact that trout, even though they're not spring or summertime fall mode, they sure could reach out and grab a slick lure.
They can, and you can it's amazing. One of the things that amazes me, and always has for doing wintertime fishing, is how hard they still hit. The mm-hmm. fish we caught on grubs, there was no doubt when you got a bite. The fish we even caught on the corks, for example, it wasn't like the cork just slowly went under. It was there, and it was gone. Mm-hmm. It's like they don't fool around. There is no doubt when you get a bite, and that's one of the things that's really, fascinated me about wintertime fishing, is how hard those fish still hit.
Yeah.
Bobby, I can remember, it's been maybe 3 or 4 years ago we had you on the show, and you had one of the best trips you ever had in your life. It was around this time of year, 30 degrees or whatever it was cold, and wasn't many people fishing, and you said you had the best trip you had ever had in your life, and that had to be good.
It is. Yep, and I tell you, that's kind of a function, too, of cold weather is you get it's a lot of times just a function of finding those fish, too. When you find them, they get so bunched up. And in that case there, and I think to this day, it's probably still one of the best days I've ever had. You get one of those situations like that, and you get so many fish in there, and then, you know, all the stars and moon and everything else align, and it's the time when they're actually on the feed. You can't help but catch them, and that was what happened. And I've had not days like that all the time. I'd love to, but, you know, that's what happened on that kind of thing. And so, you know, here we are, mid-January, mm-hmm. and the fishing's still good. The fish aren't going anywhere. You have to figure out what you have to do to catch them, but they're not going. They're staying in these rivers until they literally get flooded out, which usually doesn't happen for another couple months. So,
but that's the thing that was impressive, too, because you talked about the conditions in that river the other day. And then when we were fishing, maybe the 5 days before that, and we got a lot of rain here locally. What these dead-end rivers, you think, okay, you look at them, they look like chocolate milk on top. Didn't they get flooded out? But, in fact, they didn't.
They didn't. And, it's usually if you can get a biblical event like we had, what was it, around New Year's, where you had like 8 inches of rain. I just thought, sure, that was the end of it. But 4 or 5 days later, we were right back catching them. Whereas we had, the rain we had here not too long ago didn't mess it up nearly enough to run them out of there. But one of the other things to go with that is, it's easy when you're a saltwater fisherman to look at fresh water and go, there's no way they're living in this. They don't need the salinity this time of year that they do in April, May, June when they're spawning. And case in point is this. I had some fish. We had a tournament Saturday, and this past Saturday, and I kept some of the people. Most of us kept them alive and let them go after we weighed in. But there were a lot of fish that didn't make it, and so I kept them and cleaned them to give to fish to people that I always promised fish to. We hardly ever keep them, but anyway. When I was cleaning those fish, and there were some pretty decent-sized fish that were female fish, there was zero roe in any of those fish, zero. So they're not spawning right now. So they don't need a high salinity environment like they need in those spawning months, like I was talking about, like April, March, April, May. March and April is when they start spawning, and they'll spawn well into really to the fall. That's when that's when they're going to really need to be in a higher salinity environment than they are right now. So they're just not leaving. Because they don't have to. They need about, I've read 5 parts per thousand, which is really, really low salinity to survive. But, like what we were fishing in the other day, we were probably in the, barely double-digit salinity levels, and those fish were still there and still willing to bite. But I don't think they would have been there if it was, April or May in that low of salinity. So it's something you got to kind of almost make yourself, get past the idea of, I got to have air, clear water, or high salinity water. You don't really have to have that this time of year, and you can still catch those fish. They're not getting run out of there the way that we traditionally think that they do.
Yeah, another thing that stood out to me, too, you talk about them not being in a spawning mode. So when we went to that, we're in the 3.5 feet of water, I'm like, my gosh, we're fishing corks. But you pointed out to me, so we'd catch, fish or two. Normally, spring fishing, if I'm with you, you're putting the poles down, power poles down, and we're staying on that. Now we're on the school. You're going to work them over and catch a bunch of them. But it wasn't. They were just in a general area. They weren't ganged up in one spot like spring fishing.
That's right, because during the spring they're going to be spawning too, and that's when they gather in those big schools. And so, you put the sticks down, like you said, during the you stop the boat, whatever means you use to stop the boat. You stop it. You're going to catch, on a bad stop, 6 or 8, sometimes 20, 30, 40 fish per stop because they're in that, they're in those schools spawning. Whereas I still stopped us the other day because, because I just wanted, we were, needed to get a couple more fish and I thought we might gather, still get into it. But and we catch a couple together, but not nearly like they do when they're spawning. And that's another, that's more evident of the fact that they're not spawning because they're just not gathered up in those schools like that. And so when you in the spring and the summer, when you hit those schools, that one fish, you found a school. Whereas now, they're going to be there, but it's more for what little bit of bait there is, whatever, reason is keeping them there, whether it be some little bit of current or a little bit higher salinity made down towards the bottom, but it's not because they're spawning.
So it's worth somebody who goes out today and is doing that to take another drift through. Like you drift through an area and you power down, but you only caught two, and then you drift some more and caught one, and then got. It's worth going back up because you didn't see all the fish, maybe.
No, not by any means.
Yeah,
that's right. That's a good thing to do this time of year because, you're finding areas that they're in, but it may not be that big mega school that you're looking for. There's not going to be in a big wad like that. So absolutely, for sure. You look at a place like the Delta, for example, too. That's another classic case of that. How many times have you made multiple drifts down the raft or the Spanish? You drift through and you drift a quarter mile or a half a mile. And crank up and run back up through and catch them just as good you did on your first drift.
True.
So that's the same type of thing is going on right there.
All right.
We just did it in a much shallower version.
Yeah, like at 3.5 feet. But Captain Bobby, somebody wants to. So I would suggest they really take advantage of this. Your wintertime special fishing is great. Tell them how they get a trip booked if they want to do it right now, or get something booked for the spring. How they get in touch with you.
You just go to ateamfishing.com, and I'm doing something that I started last year, very similar to what you and I did the other day. I'm doing a single-person rate, and it's just with two of us on the boat. You don't have to have – most of our trips in the past are for one to three people. You pay the same if you're by yourself or if you got two buddies with you. We're doing a single-person rate. It'll be a trip like you and I did the other day with just me and you on the boat, and it's a considerably reduced rate. So you can check that out at our website, which is ateamfishing.com.
Bobby, we appreciate it, man. We'll check back with you soon, and if you do go fishing on Tuesday, let me know.
Okay, yeah, so you won't be there with me.
That's right. We'll not be there.
Thank you, Bobby.
All right, guys. Have a good weekend.
All right. Will do. There's Captain Bobby Averscato, and we're coming right back. More of FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. All right. Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Glad to have y'all here. And we are looking at some cold coming our way Tuesday.
Cold weather.
Yeah, but I mean, I think what probably makes it more interesting is there's precipitation along with the cold. We get this cold, but the freezing rain, don't get me started, but possible snow, freezing rain, that stuff coming up.
Nobody around here knows how to drive in ice.
No.
Bridges ice up, and nobody around here pays attention to that. There's going to be a lot of wrecks.
Yeah, and it's like I had said on the midday show this last week, it does give you a chance. If you have that truck with the winch, right, or you got the tow strap, you ride this stuff around all year long. This is your chance. The last ice storm we had here, I was pulling people out of ditches, right? It makes you feel good. You pull them out. You're like, hey, I got this stuff. Now I get to use it.
Yeah, might make a little money.
Well, you don't charge your fellow man at that point. Come on, Mike. All right. So in the depths of the freeze here coming up, I thought it'd be perfect to get this man on. And joining us, he is Director of Alabama Marine Resources, Colonel Scott Bannon, to talk about cold weather. And some fish too, yeah.
So I don't like talking about cold weather, other than other people dealing with cold weather. But I do have a 2024 Ford Bronco that I would love to slip into four wheel drive and maybe give it a shot.
Right. So. I mean, that's the thing. Like, we all have this stuff, and it's kind of fun to use it. You're smiling.
I bought a snatch rope.
You're smiling because y'all. If coming up on Tuesday, into Wednesday, if we do get the freezing rain, the ice out there, and you do slide off the road, don't worry. There's a whole bunch of Sean's and Scott's and Mike's out there looking to pull you out of the ditch. So
not Mike's,
not Mike's,
Sean's, no, and Scott's.
Yeah, Sean and Scott are
going to be hovering around the campfire.
We're taking this the tow rope out of the plastic wrap, brand new. We get to use it. Yeah.
So I'm originally from Kentucky, and my family still lives there. My dad, who's 81 years old, has been super excited about the snow. He's been clearing everybody's driveway with his tractor, pulling people out. So he is living his best life.
See, I love it.
My youngest brother used his F-150 to pull a tractor trailer out of a ditch. He sent a picture, said, I don't know if I can make it happen, and he did it. So, again, there's a little bit of fun to be had, but, again, we want people to be safe.
Yes.
And, you know, we are not used to that. Those kind of conditions around here. So I will encourage, usually I encourage people to go fishing. Maybe Tuesday, watch the fishing shows.
Right.
Go to some YouTube.
Or like Bobby and I talked about the other day, it's a good day to like check tackle.
Yes.
And make sure you got all your tackle lined out, your rods, make sure all the eyes are where they need to be and the reels are lined up and ready to go.
Might be a good day to shop for tackle. I don't know.
Yeah.
You know,
That's true.
Take a few minutes to slow down, get those gift cards out.
Now we're talking.
I've spent online already. Pulling people out of ditches.
You're going to be spending that. Well, I got to ask you. So, I mean, obviously, it has not happened yet, but we did talk during the news break about, you know, you hear gets cold somewhere and they have fish kills.
Yes.
Now, somewhere along the Gulf Coast is so different. I mean, we all get it. Like, we're a deep water fishery. Parts of Louisiana are shallow water. Texas is shallow water fishery. So, y'all have any thoughts on that?
So, we typically don't have cold water incidents because our fish have access to deeper water. And it's kind of like a lot of things. They start to feel that colder weather. The water temperatures start dropping, and they start moving to those areas where they're more comfortable. Whereas a place like Texas with a long, shallow coastline, and that freeze happens, it traps those fish.
They lost three years ago?
Tremendous amount. And so
I've been seeing the pictures, y'all. I mean, it looked like just a straight, like, chemical fish go, like rodenone or something. It was unreal.
And almost every year they have incidents with the sea turtles as well.
Mm-hmm.
It catches them off guard. This week they've been working on that. And we will see, especially a species like mullet. So mullet will get up in these shallows and they'll school and they start to eat that oxygen up. And if they're running from that cold water and there's nowhere to go and they stay in that area, it really becomes more of a low oxygen event. And
I wouldn't have thought about that.
With the cold. So,
because of the cold, they're traveling to try to get away from the cold. They're eating up the oxygen and they end up dying of low oxygen,
and they're impacted by the cold. You know, they slow down.
Wow.
There's but again, generally, we'll get a few days of these freezing weather, but I don't anticipate any real fish problems. Again, maybe some relatively small incidents of menhaden, mullet.
Mm-hmm.
I still think the trout and the redfish and species like that are going to be fine.
And I got to imagine when you start talking about prey species like mullet and menhaden, they bounce back pretty quickly population-wise.
Yes.
All right. Speaking of populations and on the game fish side, you had talked before with me and Mike about doing this listening event, going out to different places in Mobile and Baldwin County,
yes,
right, to talk about some questions about, you know, fish species and regulations going forward. So you had these meetings.
We did.
And just talking to people about, what did you hear from people, concerns that they had? What was voiced to you?
So we had three public meetings, and we offered an online version, so we had some folks listen in online. And so probably had, I think, just over 100 people participate in the meetings, which is good. And we had an agenda or an itinerary of potential regulation changes, some species of concern that we're watching pretty closely. Sheep's head was one, snook, which is kind of new to the area.
Yeah, there's people listening that hadn't heard you talk before or follow those Facebook pages said, what are they doing talking about snook?
Yeah. Yes, it's kind of exciting to talk about snook, but then we have some flounder discussions because in 2019 we had made some changes.
Mm-hmm.
The red snapper season, that was a topic of discussion, is how we manage the red snapper season. And then sharks, there's some people that would like to harvest more sharks in state waters, so we're looking at some rules to maybe address that. And a little bit of bow fishing with the stingrays and skates. Skates and rays is how we deemed that, because that has started to become more popular. There's a few charter anglers and private anglers that bow fish.
And I know there's a lot of that in Louisiana, too. I mean, do you have any count on, like, how many people are doing it? Is it 20? Is it 200?
We don't. Across the state, it has become much more popular, especially in the freshwater areas.
Yeah.
We are starting to see and hear of it more in the saltwater areas. Now, the difference between us and Louisiana is we don't allow people to bow hunt for or bow fish for red drum.
Right.
So that's an extremely popular species when they're over there in the shallows and they're tailing and they get to shoot those. We do not allow that. Game fish, speckled trout, and red drum are not open to the harvest from a bow. The only way to take those is by hook and line.
Right.
So that kind of draws down some of that that where people will go to Louisiana and not come here. But we have some very successful charter guys that take people for the skates and rays and flounder and mullet and gar sometimes and buffalo and some different things depending on what area. They're in big black drum. So there are different species that are available. It's exciting. It's different. You know, it's challenging, you know, trying to deal with, you know, anybody that's ever shot a bow and the frustration they've experienced just trying to hit a target a few meters away. And then now you add the reflection and refraction. Those
shoot
are two big terms.
Yeah.
I pretend like I know what they are, but cause you to kind of not sight in correctly on species. So it is an exciting and adventurous type angling.
Now, speaking of charters, let me get into some of these changes that are proposed out there. And looking through a PDF, and this is the first one here, the captain on a charter trip.
Mm-hmm.
As it stands now, the captain can keep a limit as well?
Yes.
What they're fishing?
On state-licensed commercial party boats in state waters, they can keep their limit if you have captain and crew. Now, most of ours don't have crew.
These are small. If you're inshore, you got
boats.
The captain.
Yeah, you got a captain. And so they're eligible to keep their limit one time a day.
Mm-hmm.
And so really this is more of a user group request. It came from the charter industry to have this discussion, and there seems to be a lot of support for that, that if you're going to be a responsible charter captain, that you are not going to maintain or retain your bag limit, you're going to leave those fish in the water for the customers and for other anglers. Now, if you want to go as a private angler,
when
you're not on a charter, then go for it. And because we are now at around just under 400 charter licenses.
That's a graph I'm looking at, y'all, that it shows in 2001 we were around 150.
Mm-hmm.
And in 2023,
yes.
Almost 400?
Almost 400. Now, that includes the federally permitted offshore boats, but that's a very small percentage compared to the rest. Most of them are six-pack licenses, which are those inshore guys mostly. So it doesn't mean all of those
are they active?
Operating active charters. Some of it are, you know, if you have a captain's license and you want to go ahead and get that commercial party boat license, and then you have family and friends come in and they don't buy a license, you're acting as a charter. That is technically legal and correct. So there's a little bit of that. Some people are part-time, as you know, but then other people are full-time.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them do make two trips a day for these inshore species. So there's some pressure on there. So it's really just about from the community to be responsible and conservation-minded captains.
Is it the math of, okay, so we have potentially close to 400.
Mm-hmm.
They're going out. And if they're keeping, you know, you can take the number of captains by whatever the creel is, let's say speckled trout, six speckled trout, and then multiply that through the year? Is that kind of
yes,
the
idea? Yes. The numbers add up pretty quick. So let's say you have 100 charter trips a day.
Okay.
And let's just say 5 days a week. You know,
yeah.
So that's 500 trips. So if you kept your limit
3,000
each of those times, that's a lot of fish every week. So again, because the number of times they go fishing, and really the angler is already having an amazing experience here, and most of our charter captains do a great job of putting them on fish and making their trip enjoyable. There's not really a need to bump that number by giving them the captain's limit. And again, that mainly came from charter fishermen who felt like we needed to have a rule to ensure that people are being responsible and acting in a conservation-minded manner. So really overwhelming support for it from anglers that are not charter captains and from charter captains.
Yeah, the charter captains, sir, that's the question that they're buying in. Of course, the recreational side. And speaking of which, Mike noted this early on, we're in the news break. On the recreational side, we just talked about the increase of for hire six-pack and captains like recreational, non-charter cap. Give us some numbers here, Colonel Bannon. Like, what are we looking at increase?
So let's go back to that 2001 time period, probably 75 or 80,000 saltwater private angler licenses of some sorts, whether it's resident, non-resident, trip, pier license, all those different ones that are available. to 2023, it was about 214,000. So I use the expression, that's a lot of hooks in the water.
Yeah.
And
once again, it was 70, 80,000.
Mm-hmm.
It went to
214,000, I believe is the number in 2023.
Basically 24 or 25 years.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I love the fact that that many people are getting an opportunity.
Our secret is not a secret anymore.
No,
here.
They are fishing in Alabama. So that is a great thing. And to be honest with you, that's what generates revenue for my agency and what keeps the lights on. So that's good for us. But for the fish, the concern is, you know, that amount of pressure is what we have to pay attention to. So a species can be fine from a habitat perspective, from a reproductive perspective. Like everything is good for that fish other than they're getting a lot more hooks thrown at them. So that's where...
Right. I mean, your formula, if you would assume that X number are taken per angler and you made the total formula based on 80,000 and now it's triple that, then, yeah, at least the question here, how many... And I don't know how many people back then were catch and release, how many people now, I don't know.
So I do think catch and release has become a more popular thing than it had in the past. So we do see that. But we also look at the numbers through our surveys of, you know, what are the fish that are being kept? What are people bringing home? What are they targeting? So there's a lot that goes into it, but on face value, that's a lot of people going fishing.
It is. All right. We're coming back from the break. More with Colonel Scott Bannon, Director of Alabama Marine Resources, right here on FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Welcome back, FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward, and our guest, Colonel Scott Bannon, Director of Alabama Marine Resources. And going through some of these proposed changes here, and I guess what we've done at this point is given the reasons why. Creel limits here. And we'll probably not get to everything here, but first of all, first thing I come to, and we're fixing to start talking about this on the show, February, March, it's sheep's head time, man.
Is.
You know, everybody's going to go after sheep's head. It has become, you and I talked about it during the break, it has become more popular. It used to be just kind of a thing. Now it's a big thing. And I don't know if that's because of YouTube videos or whatever, but it's a thing.
I think there's a couple of things. As more people moved to these inshore boats a few years ago, then they started looking for reasons to use it and be able to use it year round. And it just so happened that sheep's head is a species that they can have access to when there's not access to some of the other species. And interestingly enough, I wish I could find the picture where we have a camera at Perdido Pass, and I saw a lot of boats at Perdido Pass, and I thought there was some kind of incident or something, and people were gathered around.
Mm-hmm.
I zoomed in, and everybody always says, you know, you can walk from boat to boat. You could have walked from boat to boat everywhere except for the channel. They left the channel open. Everyone had their eye pilots or their trolling motors turned into the current, catching sheep's head at the pass. And so it was fascinating to see that. And then also a little bit concerning, it was like, how much effort are we now putting on this particular species?
Right.
So what we did is we did what we call a profile. It's just shy of doing a stock assessment. And so things were trending down slightly, and it's really, again, the habitat is fine, the reproductive rates are fine. There's a lot more effort. And generally the rest of the year, it's an occasionally caught species, but during, as we're approaching February, March, April, it becomes very, very popular, and it's a 10 fish limit. So if you start
during the sheep's head rut, as I call it, they're rutting,
they're spawning season. They aggregate together like that. So we're mindful of that. We looked at some numbers, and really, I think we can make a little bit of a preemptive change where it's not drastic. You know, we're trying to do a better job of responding and not reacting, so that we respond ahead of time. So sheep's head is one of those that I think if we drop the bag limit to 8 per person, and that primarily impacts this time of year, not the rest of the year, because they're not that heavily targeted, and you won't see as many limits. It's just this.
So y'all's research, people are keeping, I mean, I'm ignorant to this, people are keeping their 10?
Yes, absolutely. You can see on, so pier fishing, sheep's head has become very popular. A matter of fact, in one day, I happened to see a post from Cedar Point Fishing Pier where a person had an amazing day catching sheep's head, and then at Perdido Pass on the bulkhead, they had an amazing day. It was social media pictures in the same day, people saying almost the identical thing, like they had a banner day and had their limit of mm-hmm. sheep's head. So that's great. We want to continue to have access to our shoreside anglers for a species, and sheep's head is one of those that's available because anywhere there's structure, they like to hang out. So, again, a little bit of a reduction without making it drastic.
So, a creel limit reduction, what about length?
So, we looked at the length, and if the average length of the landed fish is about 15 inches, which is well above what the minimum length is. So, when we talked to Dr. Powers and we looked at our stuff, that really making that length change really doesn't do anything. We might make it just for formality's sake, but right now they're not keeping those smaller fish. And as that, about 75% of those fish are sexually mature when they get to that 14, 15 inch length, and that's about where they're keeping. So that's the average size. So we're in a pretty good place as far as the size fish that people are keeping.
Well, is there any thought process? I don't want to take too long on this because we're running out of time, but the way we do, and we'll get to redfish, red drum mm-hmm. in a second, and speckled trout now too, having some limit slot-wise that favors the big spawners and breeders.
It could, but they're not. We're not seeing a lot of those bigger spawners. They grow fairly quick. So, again, everything else tells us that they're fine. We just need to account for that increased activity and targeting of this species. And the best way to do that is just to lower it by a few fish. That gives you a few more years to continue to look at it and see what the trends look like. So I tell everyone, please be very careful of looking at spikes in data. It's kind of like the stock market. Look at the overall trend, not at the
year to year.
Yeah, last year it was amazing. Well, the year before you bottomed out. So look at the trend, and it trends down slightly. That if we do this reduction, it should be keep things on an even keel for a little while.
I tell you what, I think Mike and I have talked about this. The flounder, the results in flounder.
Oh man, yeah.
Give people a reason, I think, to go, okay, this is how it works.
So let's jump to flounder really quickly. So we are considering, in 2019, when we made those changes, we went from a 10-fish bag limit to a 5-fish limit on flounder. And for the first time, we instituted a commercial limit, especially for our gillnet guys, which is primarily the commercial fishery for that species. They went to a 40-fish limit, whereas it had been unlimited previously. Mm-hmm. I made the promise. We did the November closure, and all the Gulf states now have that November closure, which is probably the number one management tool that is most effective.
Okay.
Is you reduce the effort.
When they're going out through the passes.
When they're going out through the pass. They are very isolated going through those choke points to get offshore to spawn. So I said, if we get a chance to give a fish back to a person, give an increase back, we should consider that. So on the recreational angler side, the number of anglers and the number of fish that are being caught are going up. And that is an amazing thing. And again, use that social media barometer. Look at the pictures. Mm-hmm. People are posting great pictures. I had a diver tell me, he was in Perdido Pass the last week of October before that closure, and he said it was covered in flounder. He said
that's awesome.
Him and his father have been doing that for years. He said he'd never seen that many flounder. So those are good indicators. Our numbers are going up. So the private anglers as a whole have seen an increase in catch. Now, maybe an individual angler is not catching more than five because that's his limit, or her limit. But overall, anglers are catching more flounder. That's a success. That's a win in my book. So the challenge is we have this commercial activity. Bylot Batchery is a seafood capital of the state here. We provide jobs. We provide food and put on people's tables. And we had limited that. And I think there's an opportunity to give those handful of commercial fishermen, and to use gillnets in particular, they are literally dying off. They cannot renew that license. They can't pass that license down. If they pass away or if they fail to renew that license goes away. There's a very small number that target flounder because it's a very specific way you fish. You have to have very specific gear. And they were limited to 4 fish. It is hard to make a
40
living.
40 fish.
40 fish. 40 I'm sorry, did I say 40?
Yeah.
40 fish. So it is very difficult to make a living. We see an opportunity that we can give those few commercial fishermen who are providing food and jobs a little bit of an increase. And so we're looking at whether you go from 40 to 60 to 80 or 100 fish per trip. They're not going to do more trips. There's only certain times when everything aligns for them to be able to make trips. They're still going to make the same number of trips. So we could actually work out the numbers, and you can see that in the overall catch, it barely moves the needle in the number of pounds harvested every year. And the big factor in that, from what it would have been years ago, is that November closure. There used to be really high numbers in November.
That's what I'm going to ask you. Is the November still going to be closed?
The November will still stay closed. And so we're just looking at giving that. It is probably six or seven fishermen that fish with any regularity, but it's how they make their living. But it doesn't move the needle much on the overall harvest.
All right. A minute or two left here before the break, and I don't want to run out of time on all this. Redfish. What's going on?
So the discussion is, again, a lot of effort. There's been some concerns about those bull reds, those oversized fish. It comes from charter community, some private anglers who target it pretty heavily. We talked with Dr. Sean Powers about the red drum numbers, and so we're discussing eliminating that possession of one oversize with the potential to create a tagging system. Texas does this. They have a tagging system so that you could possess an oversize, you know, throughout the year, you'd get one tag when you got by your license in Texas. That'll take some time to work out, but it will help us increase those numbers. Most people don't want to keep those bigger fish, other than a few anglers who only only get to fish occasionally, and that's the biggest fish they ever caught. So we do understand that, but those are the big breeders. You know, the schoolies are the ones that you see that we have those die-offs occasionally in the early part of the year, and that's a weather anomaly that causes that to happen. But we want to try and keep as many big breeders in the system, and the best way to do that is to eliminate that possession of the oversize.
Okay, because you're seeing a downward trend.
A little bit of a downward trend
in the smaller
reds. Downward trend in the redfish population as a whole.
I wonder if just more hooks in the water for them too.
Absolutely, and it's an extremely popular species, and we want to keep it popular.
All right, coming right back, more with Colonel Scott Bannon right here on FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward, glad to have you along with our guest, Colonel Scott Bannon, Alabama Marine Resources. And we've been talking about these proposals and these regulations, and I'm looking through a printed out PDF, but this is available online.
It is at OutdoorAlabama.com. It's under our bag and creel limit page. There's a link to the presentation that we made to the public. There's an email where you can submit questions or comments. There is a comment card at the end that we passed out to the public so that we could gather the information and get the comments that people had so they can fill that out and send it to me. So the email address would be marine.resources@dcnr.alabama.gov. But outdooralabama.com, under the bag and creel limit, under saltwater fishing, you should be able to find this presentation.
All right. So as we get just a few minutes left in the show, I want to go here first to red snapper.
Mm-hmm. Red snapper
is... What are we looking at?
So this year, we struggled to get to our quota. We had about 660,000 pounds, give or take. If you remember, the weather for the opening weekend was terrible. There was a tropical issue in the Gulf that actually caused problems for the entire Gulf of Mexico. We had two major hurricanes come in through the panhandle of Florida. Or the Big Bend area of Florida. So the Gulf was stirred up for most of the summer, and that dramatically impacted fishing. But also with the size fish, the numbers of fish, the number of people that are going, the panic fishing, I think, is over in red snapper. I consider that a success. That's been my goal, is to end panic fishing.
Yes.
We have fish available. And so we didn't close until the end of the year. So I would like to provide a little more access earlier in the year when people are fishing. So we're considering opening the season Memorial Day weekend, like we have been, the Friday before Memorial Day, and running straight through until the end of June. So it's 7 days a week.
They're not the four-day weekends. You're talking about Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday.
Right, all week long until we get to the beginning of July, and then transition to the four-day weekends throughout the rest of the summer. Because the bite is a little better in June anyway. It's a more popular time for people to go target red snapper. So let's give them that opportunity. And if you think about it, it moves 12 days from the end of the year to the beginning of the year.
Yeah, I was wondering, I mean, is research out there that for how many, like on a, how many anglers would go on a Tuesday, Wednesday, or Thursday?
If you were on vacation,
sure.
You would go. So, and that's a prime vacation time.
Sure.
And so We have, in July, you know, we've talked about this before, the bike turns off, it gets hot. So let's give you some access, and let's go in. We have a quota, so we measure that. So let's give people an opportunity when the fishing is better to have access to it. And we will probably still, if we moved 12 weekend days into weekdays in June, we would still fish probably until Labor Day. So again, we've done a terrible job of predicting behavior, so we'll mm-hmm. see what happens. But I will meet with the commissioner later this month. We're going to have that discussion. But
it could look like this. It opens like Friday this. Before Memorial Day, and you're just fishing it any day you want to mm-hmm. the whole way through the end of June.
Until July 1st, and then we go to the four-day weekends. And again, because then we then start you to give gauge.
Us, it depends on when Independence Day falls, but you've given us that.
That week.
Yeah, that week.
If it falls on a Wednesday, yeah. It makes sense to give you. I think this year it falls like on a Friday or a Monday or something like that again. So it kind of fell within the four-day weekend already. So, and believe it or not, we don't see that dramatic of an increase in effort at the Independence Day weekend or Labor Day weekend. I think those are really geared towards family events, and fishing does not always fall for a lot of people.
Who are those people, Mike? Who's he talking about?
I don't know. I don't know those people. But the numbers tell us that we don't see a big increase on that holiday. So again, I think we're going to be fine to give people access earlier in the year.
I like it. You're kind of looking at, hey, we can do this, so therefore give.
And remember, you and I talked about this before. As under state management, we have the ability to respond to what the people want,
mm-hmm.
not just what Scott wants, not just what the government wants.
Right.
This is what the people want. And so I had to
we
to
got
make
this
sure
much we, pie. How are we going to eat
how
it?
How are we going to eat it?
Yeah.
And so I think there's a better way to eat it. I think we get a little bit of big chunk early in the year, and then we start the diet. So I think it'll work out well. I will talk to the boss. So later this, and we'll present this to our Conservation Advisory Board. All these regulation, any potential regulation changes, will be presented to the Conservation Advisory Board, which is March 8th in Montgomery. Anyone is allowed to attend that. We'll make a presentation, and they'll provide input. Then we'll make final decisions in May. Now the red snapper season, the commissioner and I will make that decision.
It sounds good. I think that's a great idea. I mean, one day maybe we can get back to just go fishing,
just going fishing.
When you want to, and just have a limit, and it don't matter when you go. Maybe one day.
Who knows? Did ask the question, would people not high grade in coal as much if they had a higher bag limit? And Louisiana is doing a study on that. They did increase their bag limit, and they're looking at, does that reduce culling and high grading? That means quit throwing fish back that
right,
are legal
right.
size. And so we really want people to quit to catch those nice legal fish and keep them, and then you'll start to see that size increase. So we're waiting for Louisiana to complete their study to kind of see how that worked out for them. But that's always a potential change. But we did ask that question, is what were people's feelings related to that? And a lot of people
Then you don't get the throwbacks.
Correct.
You know, I mean, you don't the whatever the loss, whatever the term is.
It won't be a discard mortality.
And their limit is 4.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
Where ours is 2.
It's 2.
Yeah, but if the numbers worked out that, you know, you keep 2, but you had 2 died that you discarded,
if
you keep 4, then yeah.
That's right.
I don't want to run out of time. I'm interested in the snapper thing. We'll talk about it again here in the next couple of months. But just a minute and a half here. But snook, you mentioned at the beginning of the show. Here's this. It's a Florida fish. It's a Brownsville, Texas fish.
Yes.
What?
They are a more subtropical fish. They very quickly moved north in Florida, and now they have they seem to be establishing themselves here in Alabama. They're being caught with more regularity. We've had a state record 2 years ago. It was broken again last year. We're seeing people – so the people would like to see some protection. We don't have a lot of data, so we are responding to what the public would like to see. So we asked some questions about that. So regulatory-wise, what we are considering is following the Florida rules that are in place. They have
do seasonal closures.
They do
too.
Have some seasonals. Yeah. I'm struggling with the seasonal closures because it's just not a big fishery here yet. But considering the one fish per person with a 28-inch minimum length, I had said 24 initially just so that people could catch them. But there's actually a large number of people want us to have a no take, and I struggle with that because then you got to have the data to get out of a no take.
Yeah.
And right now I think we should have some access to it, that we're considering a one fish per person, probably a 28-inch minimum. Florida has a slot, which is 28 to 33. I don't think it'll make much difference now. But, again, maybe in the year or two we're having a discussion about it again.
I love it. Thanks for coming in.
No, always enjoy it.
Thank
you,
Scott.
Bundle up.
Yeah, absolutely. And we'll do it all again next week for another edition of FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors.